fever. Catch it. You're part of the team. Joining us now, the designated hitter on Chapman University's 2003 Division III National Championship team. They called him Levo on that team, too, I'm sure. Maybe the most excitement he's seen in baseball since the Rancho Cucamonga Quakes were lighting it up back in 2005. It is the great Jeff Levering, who every time we call is dumb enough to agree to come on the show. Hey, buddy, how are you?
Hey, I mean, your intros, Wildy, are just second to none. Let me tell you. Yeah, throwbacks to 03 in Appleton, Wisconsin, even Rancho Cucamonga, which currently was, I mean, they called it the epicenter, the ballpark, because there was an earthquake virtually every single day in Rancho Cucamonga, California, because it's on the fault line. How about that?
That is, it is incredible that you have such a storied career, but I'm guessing that of all the things you've done already in your young career still, although not as young as you used to be when we first got to know you, nothing quite like what you're calling right now. What the hell is going on out there? It's amazing.
I said it in the call yesterday, unfreaking believable. I wanted to say something else, but then I wouldn't be working today. So the thing is that I've never seen anything like this. And you have to almost think it's cosmic, the way that things have been going. And it's not just a fluke. It's not, this has happened for a week and, oh my gosh, the team is playing so great for a week and then the other shoe's going to fall off. The team has been playing like this since May. So for people to think that this is a fluke thing and that this is not who this team is, I think they're delusional. I've never seen anything like this before. And if you ask anybody in that front office, if you ask anybody in that clubhouse, they'd say, this is crazy, right? They're just riding the wave. And that's the thing, is that this team realizes what's happening, but they just show up for each other every day. And they're pulling for each other. And they love each other. And they only made a couple of very small moves at the trade deadline because these are the guys that they wanted to go into battle with. And it's been an unbelievable run. I've never seen anything like this. And like I said, it's almost cosmic the way that everything is kind of coming together over the last couple of months. And there's still plenty of time left and more unbelievable things that I'm sure we'll see.
Jeff, when you think back to, and I joke about Rancho Cucamonga, but you've been doing this for over 20 years now, right? Like, The only thing that I keep thinking of is like Moneyball, where the A's win 20 in a row, because they haven't won 20 in a row, but they won 11, and now they've won 9 in a row. Like, this is pretty wild. I'm wondering, at any point, because you know baseball, sometimes there is a regression to the mean. And to me, my only question about what they're doing now is when there is that little bump in the road, which may be coming between now and September, what makes this team better equipped to deal with it, put it behind them, and then get back to being good? Because you know baseball's gonna bite you at some point, even if it's only hopefully for a brief time.
Sure. I mean, it bit the Brewers for the first 7 weeks of the season, right? So you learned a lot from that time. You learned a lot from how you can play and how you can band together, and the ingredients to the soup are pretty much the same as what they were at the beginning of the season. I think that they have the depth to withstand something like that now, especially on the mound. They've got guys down in the minor leagues. I know Logan Henderson got hurt, but you're going to get Miz back. You have Chad Patrick down in the minor leagues that can help you out if you want to. Some pieces in the bullpen, but this offensive group has been pretty much the same all season long. I just think that this team is so resilient, and you could even look back to when Brandon Woodruff came back, that started in Miami. The team is 24-4 since he came back. 24-4. I mean, that just doesn't happen in today's world. And you mentioned the A's, the Moneyball era. They win 20 straight games. This is a bigger stretch And I just think that this team is so resilient. They don't lose three games in a row very often. They haven't done that since May. I mean, it's an incredible group of players when they band together. And if something goes AWOL, it's not going to take long for them to get it right back together and right the ship.
So, Levo, yesterday, you're on this streak. You have the great play Friday night to walk off, and then Saturday with the big win. It just seems like human nature would be it was a mess to get into the stadium yesterday. You fall back 5-0. And yesterday was just a great example of guys not giving in. And that's a hard thing to do when you play 162 games. As you're watching it, was it after Contreras hit the second home run that you started thinking, okay, or was it from the jump, even down 5-0, did you think, this team just won't give an inch to anything?
I think it was in the inning where they scored the three runs. So you had Contreras' first home run to make it 5-1. And once you got that first run, I think it was, okay, he started to build that momentum. And then Ortiz got the two-out, two-strike single through the left side to make it 5-3. That's when I think it started to kick in. And the Mets have played that game so long, for the last 2 weeks, right? They've blown some leads. They're playing really bad. And as soon as that doubt crept into their minds, I think game was on for the Brewers. So for me, it was the Ortiz two-run single in the fourth inning to make it 5-3 that everybody started to believe. But again, the Brewers have played that game so many times, and to see as many people into the ballpark as there were yesterday, with as crappy as the situation has been in Wisconsin, and I hope everybody's doing okay. I mean, I got home last night and I ripped up my basement. It was soaked, and my neighbors came over and helped me out and pulled out my entire carpet, and I'm really lucky that that was the minimum that we've had, and we're still drying out down in the basement. A lot more people are dealing with a lot of worse situations, so we're all thinking about everybody. But the fact that there was many people that showed up at the ball game yesterday, and not just showed up early. I pulled into the ballpark 11 o'clock because I was dealing with stuff in my basement, and the parking lots were packed. Because people want to see this team play. And I think that shows a lot about the fan base. It shows a lot about what this team is doing right now to galvanize this community. And it's going to be a hell of a summer and a hell of a fall, I think, in Milwaukee.
So, Jeff, if you had it's tough to pinpoint this thing, but besides Jesse calling for Pat Murphy's job in May, what has been the big thing that has sparked
really
this team to do the unthinkable things that we've been seeing him do?
Jesse really called for Pat Murphy. Get out of here.
He did.
All right.
He wanted to talk about it.
We really have to do this again. In fairness to Jesse, because Levo, by the way, does everyone call you that or just Tausch?
No, that's it. I mean, it's becoming more commonplace. There were some guys in the radio booth. Yeah. I mean, nobody knew my family didn't even call me Jeff for a long time. They just called me Levo. So, I mean, that was forever.
Right,
and it started to catch on. But Jesse, go ahead. You can have your moment. Defend yourself.
I've had more than enough of these moments. So we were at one of our teammates here, Pablo Iglesias. We were at Pablo's birthday bash the night of the cribbage board giveaway against the Twins, where the Brewers lost.
Yeah. Great giveaway,
tough
by
night. Great best giveaway in the history of the franchise. And they lost pretty bad that game, and I turned to the group we were with, and I called that game. Yeah,
I was there. I called that game.
I said, guys, they're in fourth place. They can't do anything right here this year. At what point do we need to start to think about having a conversation about Pat Murphy? You know, we never had a manager of the year that we had to ask that question about before, and since that moment, they've been the hottest team in baseball, and now they're tied for the largest division lead in the game.
I'm pretty sure, Jesse, that was the genesis of the "we need to find our edge" conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And they got shut out. They had been shut out like four times that week. They got shut out that night. That was a Pablo Lopez start by the Minnesota Twins. I remember I called that game with Adam Wainwright on Saturday, and then on Sunday, what happened? The Brewers snapped the Twins' 13-game winning streak, and since that day, the Brewers have been ungodly good. So, you know what, Jesse? Give yourself some credit. Maybe you are the guy,
Jesse,
that created the situation.
You're welcome,
pat yourself
everyone.
On the back. Yeah. Take one of those St. Louis Cardinals extendo arms to pat yourself on the back. That's what you need. So, way to go, buddy. Thank you for finding the edge for the Milwaukee Brewers, Jesse.
Thank you for your service, sir.
Did it.
So, beyond that, in addition to the difference that Jesse made with his asinine question,
I think I'm vindicated now.
What else has caused this, do you think?
Not vindicated, Jesse, never. I think it's they found out who they were, right? They were at the bottom of the barrel. They had already had two team meetings at that point. You're making silly mistakes on defense. You're making base running mistakes, and some base running mistakes still exist. But they found out who they were, right? And I think they accepted who they were more than anything else. They said, okay, guys, this is what we got. And we're either going to turn this thing around or it's going to be a tough year. And I think at that point, they accepted who they were. And they went out and they have balled ever since. They've pitched it great. They've played unbelievable defense. They have tightened things up. It's almost like the scene from Knocked Up, right, where they had the two producers talking to the talent. And they go, we can't ask you to lose weight, but let's tighten it up, right? They tightened it up. It's exactly what they did. They have tightened this thing up, and it has been so fun to watch. And I think everybody in Major League Baseball is looking at the Brewers and going, who the hell are these people? Why is Isaac Collins the number two hitter and three hitter? What is going on here? This doesn't make any sense. But they're still winning. They are winning baseball games and making people so frustrated with the way that they do it that when they're done playing the Brewers, they go, thank God we're done with these guys. I'm so glad we don't have to see these guys anymore because they are pests.
Jeff, I was watching some of baseball tonight after the Brewers win yesterday, and some of the national guys kind of looked at it and said it wasn't a money ball approach, but it was kind of the Brewers maybe are ahead of the curve when it comes to some of the new rule changes where it's easier to steal bases. Defense has always been important, but without the shifting and being able to do that, mm-hmm. that's something that maybe Milwaukee has gotten a little bit of an edge on, and they've really played to those strengths in their game plans.
That's who they have to be, though, Tausch. I mean, they have to win the little things. They have to do the little things perfectly every time. You know, when we got to the trade deadline and the whole conversation was about, well, they need to go out and get a slugger because they don't hit for enough power and all these things. And in the playoffs, it's going to be harder to string three and four hits together and all these different things. That's fine. Now the Brewers are slugging, right? They've been slugging for the last couple of weeks. But at the same time, they've done the little things so well for so many years. It's not just this year, but they have dominated the little things. And that's what you have to do. You have the people and the personnel that buy into that, that have almost been afterthoughts from other organizations, and they're hungry. Pat Murphy talks about being hungry all the time, and it's not just the pocket pancakes, right? Can we be done with that, by the way?
Nice.
We're done.
Nice.
But nonetheless, you have to be hungry and play with a chip on your shoulder. Those are the guys that Murph loves. Those are the guys that the Brewers have. And it's been great to watch the way that this team plays. But you have to buy in. And I think everybody in the system has bought in.
Levo, you don't like the pocket pancakes? That's not your deal?
I mean, I'm all right with it. But the thing is that he's been doing that for 10 years. This is not a new phenomenon. This is not new. Adam McAlvey wrote about this in spring training 2 years ago. Like, look it up on MLB.com. This is not a new phenomenon. He's done pocket egg rolls before, and I feel bad for the laundry guy who's got to get that grease stain out of your pockets. Yeah, dude. Think about an egg roll in your pocket for 5 innings. And then, oh, hey, by the way. He's done it all.
Pocket bagels. We had this discussion when the pocket pancakes came to light on that. I think it was a Friday night game.
What is the worst
food? First off, have you had pocket food before? I don't sense you're a pocket food guy, but I could be wrong. And I think sushi, obviously soup, can't do it. You can't do soup. What is the worst food that you can't have pocket soup? What would be the worst food to be pocketable, in your opinion?
The pocket food that I could do is like mints and like a Werther's caramel, right? Right.
Sure.
That's more the pocket food of my variety. I think in most, a toffee in most humans, I think that's acceptable. Worst pocket food. I mean, it would have to be like a pocket 7-Eleven rolled hot dog. You want to go with that? Because those things have been on there for 5 years to begin with. So you don't know. Okay. You got petrified forest on the roller. You don't know how long those things have been on there. So,
anything sticky, right? Like grilled cheese would be a problem.
I think sushi is going to break up. I just don't think sushi, raw fish, I don't think that's going to be good in pocket. That's a pocketable food.
Tausch has loved his pocket sushi joke now ever since the pocket
pancakes. It's not a joke. I legit think it's the worst pocketable food.
Okay, but again,
rice. The rice is going to break up anyway. You can't do that.
Yes, you want some
pocket. How about some pocket hash browns? What about that? You want some of those?
I think that could hold up. Pocket hash browns are holding up. If you have it like at certain restaurants where they're formed in one patty, and if it's just off the grill, then that's a mess, no doubt.
Okay.
All right, Jason.
What do you think the people at Hot Pockets feel right now? By the way,
they're feeling good. Have an endorsement with Murph. Shouldn't that be a natural endorsement? I don't know what they're doing.
Cheese,
get on
ham
it.
And cheese Hot Pocket. Yes. Let's roll.
Yes.
I think they've already got a deal with Jim Gaffigan, though.
That should be done. All right, last one for me. Let's get back on baseball because I know Jason is a baseball fanatic right now. I did not know. So this pitch clock thing has been fascinating. I think it's been good getting the game moving. But I had not seen what we saw. I think that was Saturday night, right, with Contreras, where he hits the lazy fly ball and he says to the ump, no. Can you explain how that all comes about? Is that – because to me now, if I hit something I don't like, I'm going to yell back to the ump. I just want to understand this better with the pitch clock.
Yeah, so the pitch timer violation, I mean, it's almost like the play clock in the NFL, right? So there aren't the decimals after it hits zero. It's just 1 to 0, and zero happens, and then the umpire gets buzzed when it gets to a zero. So I think Contreras, because he can see the pitch timer out of his peripheral vision as he's looking at the pitcher getting into a set and ready to pitch, and he makes and he hits a rocket to right field. But it was down to zero, and he goes, hey, listen, the pitch timer went down, and the home plate umpire must have been buzzed. Now, in that circumstance, I would love to see an umpire get on the microphone and go, pitch timer violation, it's a one ball, no strike count. That's instead of just letting it ride and letting everybody guess. I know the TV broadcast thought it might have been a potential catcher's interference, which in that case, he'd be at first base anyway. He wouldn't get the at-bat over again. So pitch timer violation, very next pitch, whack, see you later, and a huge difference-making play. But it's a timing thing, right? And umpire got buzzed, replay it, it's 1-0, Contreras, Yahtzee, see you later.
Talking with Jeff Levering, Levo, if you know him well. Couple things. I hope your basement does rally and you get everything straightened out. Thank God you've got Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin to protect the rest of your home.
Yes.
Correct. But I did have one, hardcore baseball question, and that is, how do you explain my favorite brewer currently, Andrew Vaughn? His numbers...
Yeah.
Through 48 games with the Chicago White Stockings, 189 batting average. Through 25 games with your Milwaukee Brewers, 348. His OBP went from 218 to 412. His OPS has gone from 531 to 1.041. What? Explain. Help me. Because this is awesome.
So I've got a couple of things. Number one, baseball-wise, he shows up. Murph says, I'm not going to give you a nickname. You just go hit piss rods. Go hit line drives. That's all I want you to do. Go hit line drives. Get good pitches. and hit line drives. That's what he said. Okay? So it's plate discipline, pitch recognition, getting into good counts, and making and doing good things in those counts. That's number one. Number two, if you are on the worst team in Major League Baseball, the worst team in any sport, and he was in AAA on the worst team in Major League Baseball last year, record setting, not as bad this year, but still not a great team. And you get traded to a team that is immediately in the race, immediately in first place and grinding. What are you going to do as a player? Your game is going to be elevated no matter what, because you're a part of something that you want to be a part of. You are on a winning team again. And I think that that tells you a lot about Andrew Vaughn. Hey, listen, I got people around me. I don't have to be the guy. I got a fresh start, and I'm going to go out there and I'm going to ball. And that's exactly what he's done. It's exactly what he's done. And yesterday he hits into the double play in the eighth inning, and you go, what the heck? I haven't seen this. I've never seen this before, right, where he didn't come up in a big situation. And he's going to continue to he'll get out. It happens. But he has come up in big situation after big situation and delivered for the last month, and it's been a revelation.
Yeah, it's been awesome to watch. He's one of the reasons why I've jumped on the bandwagon. All right, last thing for you so we can let you go. And you said at the beginning, you used the word cosmic. Now, I'm always leery of this kind of stuff because we all, you more than anyone, given how closely you worked with him, loved Bob Uecker. And my thought is, hey, God, it would have been great if he'd have been here for this, as opposed to us talking about how he's looking down, watching how amazing this is. But for you, because you're there every day, how do you view the whatever this is, touched by an angel, touched by a plaid sport coat, whatever you want to call it, how do you view this cosmic aspect of what this team is doing?
I would be remiss if I said you didn't feel it, right? You feel it. And especially since, I mean, this last weekend I was on the radio call and we're surrounded by Bob in that radio booth, right? And it was in yesterday's ball game, Collins hits the homer and I have the call and I'm kind of like, you can hear it in the call. I'm kind of laughing. Right? It's just like, come on.
Yeah.
This doesn't happen. I even said it. Who's writing this script? And I know a lot of people tweeted at me and have emailed and they said, well, Bob's writing this script. And I went, it's incredible. And I looked over to my right where Bob would have been sitting. And I thought about how he would have called it. I thought about him saying, how about that one, folks? Because that's what he would have said. And then Lane sitting in the seat where Bob's sitting, and there's a picture of Bob right behind Lane, and Lane was getting teary-eyed as I was finishing the call and going to break, and he just pointed at him and he went, that freaking guy. And I went, I mean, you're right. You're absolutely right. And it's something to be said, the fact that he was laid to rest where he can watch every single home game at American Family Field. You feel him in your heart every day. I mean, I'm in my office right now, and he's right above me, right? He's there. He's everywhere. And I think he's in everybody's hearts. And whether they're playing for him or not, or whether he's tugging on some heartstrings or not, some people said, you know, he had to go for the team to actually win one. We've got a long ways to go to get to that point. But I think that there's definitely a little piece of Bob that is narrating this whole thing and having a big part of it.
Well said. I just think back to Yelich after they lost last year and the emotion in his voice when he was talking about him, knowing what we didn't know on the outside that you knew on the inside too. And I don't, I'm not believing in angels here, but I do think that inspiration matters. And this is an inspired group, and it's been really neat to see. Dude, we love it when you have time for us. I understand you've got a lot on your plates and a lot of soaking wet carpeting in a dumpster somewhere. Thank you, as always. We love you, buddy. We appreciate you. Thanks, Levo.
Appreciate you guys. Yeah, everything's on my driveway. It's fine. We're all good. It's all good. Well,
nevertheless, as someone who spends a lot of time in the basement, that would have been a problem for me. So that is Jeff Levering. He is the absolute best, and we are so lucky to call him a friend. He's joined us. I remember the first time meeting him when we were like, we did the show on opening day from like, you know, the Euchre seats. We were in like the Euchre equivalent lot, right? We were like 3 miles.
A lot of wind. Very windy that day. Yeah.
A lot of wind that day. Yes, indeed, it was.
So he's been a great friend of ours, and we appreciate him a ton. That is Jeff Levering. You can hear him both on the calls on 620 WTMJ and 100.5 ESPN Madison when he's on the radio, and, of course, on FanDuel as well when he calls the games on TV.